Don't let that take away from how I feel about you. I never thought it was possible to have honest feelings for more than one person, but you've convinced me of how incredibly wrong I was. I'm not gonna lie to myself and say I don't care about you, and I'm definitely not gonna lie to you. I just hope you understand where I'm coming from, and that you will give us a chance to navigate through this, because I believe we can. If there are two people in this world capable of figuring out how to be friends, it's us. We read through each other's messages. I read his more than once. I didn't expect him to be so forthcoming and honest, especially about the fact that he cares about me. I never for one second expected him to contemplate leaving Maggie for me. That would be the worst outcome of all of this. If he left her, and we attempted to build a relationship from that, it would never work. The entire relationship would be built on betrayal and deceit, and those two things have never made and will never make for a good foundation. Ridge. Wow. I'm impressed with us. We're both so mature. His comment makes me laugh. Me. Yes, we are. Ridge. Sydney. I can't tell you what your message just did for me. Seriously. I feel like the weight of all 9 planets, because yes, Pluto will always be a planet to me, has been crushing my chest since the moment I walked away from you last night. But knowing that you don't hate me, and that you're not mad, and that you aren't concocting an evil revenge scheme, feels so damn good right now. Thank you for that. Me. Hold on. I never said I wasn't concocting an evil revenge scheme. Winky face. Also, while we're being so blunt, can I ask you a question? Ridge, what did I tell you about initiating a question with whether or not you can propose a question? Me, oh my God, I can't believe I ever kissed you. You're so annoying. Ridge, LOL, what's your question? Me, I'm concerned. We obviously have an issue with the fact that we're attracted to each other. How do we get past that? I want to write music with you, but I also know that the few moments we've had that wouldn't make Maggie very happy have all been while we're writing music. I think I'm just too desirable when I'm being creative, and I want to know what I need to do to lessen my attractiveness, if that's even possible. Ridge, keep up the egotism. It's very unattractive, and if it continues, I won't even be able to look at you in a week's time. Me. Deal. But what do I do about my attraction to you? Tell me some personal flaws that I can engrave into my memory. He laughs. Ridge. I sleep so late on Sundays I don't even brush my teeth until Monday. Me. That's a start. I need a few more. Ridge. Let's see. Once when Warren and I were 15, I had a crush on a girl. Warren didn't know I liked her, and he asked me if I would ask her out for him. I did, and she agreed, because apparently she had a crush on Warren in return. I told him she said no. Me.
Ridge, that's terrible.
Ridge. I know. I need a flaw from you now. Me. When I was 8, we went to Coney Island. I wanted an ice cream, and my parents wouldn't buy me one because I was wearing a new shirt that quote-unquote June Cleaver didn't want me to get dirty. We were walking by a trash can, and there was a melted ice cream cone in it. So when my parents turned around, I picked it up and started eating it. Ridge. Yeah, that's pretty gross. But you were only 8, so it really doesn't count. I need something more recent. High school, college. Me.
Oh, one time in high school, I spent the night at a girl's house who I didn't know very well. We made out. I wasn't into it, and it was really gross, but I was 17 and curious.
Ridge. No. That does not count as a flaw. Sydney, Jesus Christ, work with me here.
Me. I like the smell of puppy breath.
Ridge. Better. I can't hear my own farts, so sometimes I'll forget that other people can hear them.
Me. Oh my God, yes, this is the type of thing that definitely sheds a different light on you. I think I'll be good for a while.
Ridge, one more from you, and then I think we'll be equally repulsed.
Me,
a
A few days ago, when I was getting off the campus bus, I noticed Tori's car was gone. I used my extra key to let myself into her apartment because I needed a few things I had forgotten. Before I left, I opened all her bottles of liquor and spit in them. Ridge, for real? I nod because I'm too ashamed to type the word yes. He laughs. Ridge, okay, I think we're good. Meet me here at 8 tonight, and we'll see if we can navigate through a song. If we need to take breaks from the music every now and then in order to replenish our repulsiveness with a few more flaws, just let me know. Me. Deal. I close my laptop and begin to slide off the bed, but he grabs my wrist. I turn around, and he's looking at me with a serious expression. He leans over and grabs a pen, then picks up my hand and writes, "Thank you." I press my lips together and nod. He releases my hand, and I walk back to my room, attempting to ignore the fact that all the repulsive details in the world couldn't stop my heart from reacting to that simple gesture. I look down at my chest. "Hey, heart, are you listening? You and I are officially at war."
Ridge. As soon as she's out of my bedroom and the door shuts behind her, I close my eyes and exhale. I'm thankful that she isn't angry. I'm thankful that she isn't vindictive. I'm thankful that she's reasonable. I'm also thankful that she appears to have more willpower than I do, because whenever I'm around her, I've never felt so weak.
Chapter 13. Sydney. Not much has changed in the way we practice together, other than the fact that we now practice 5 feet apart from each other. We've completed a couple of songs since the kiss, and although the first night was a little awkward, we seem to have found our groove. We haven't talked about the kiss, and we haven't talked about Maggie, and we haven't discussed why he plays on the floor and why I write alone on the bed. There's no reason to discuss it, because we're both very aware of all of it. The fact that we've admitted our attraction to each other doesn't seem to have eliminated it the way we'd hoped. For me, it's like a huge elephant in the room. It feels as if it takes up so much space when I'm with him that it presses me against the wall, squeezing the last traces of breath out of me. I keep telling myself it'll get better, but it's been almost 2 weeks since the kiss, and it hasn't gotten easier at all. Luckily, I have 2 interviews next week, and if I get hired, at least it'll get me out of the house more. Warren and Bridget both work and go to school, so they're not here a whole lot. Ridge works from home, so the fact that we're both here alone the majority of the day is always at the front of my mind. Out of all the hours in the day, though, the hour I hate the most is when Ridge is in the shower, which means I really hate this hour, since that's where he is right now. I hate where my thoughts go when I know he's one wall away from me, completely unclothed. Jesus, Sydney. I hear the water turn off and the shower curtain slide open, and I squeeze my eyes shut, trying once again not to picture him. This would probably be a good time of day to turn on some music to drown out my thoughts. As soon as the door closes between the bathroom and his bedroom, there's a knock at the front door. I gladly jump off the bed and head toward the living room to get my mind off the fact that I know Ridge is in his room, getting dressed right now. I don't even bother looking through the peephole, which is a very bad oversight on my part. I swing open the door to find Hunter standing sheepishly at the top of the stairs. He eyes me, his expression apologetic and nervous. My heart drops to my stomach at the mere sight of him. It's been weeks since I last laid eyes on him. I was beginning to forget what he looked like. His dark hair is longer since I last saw him, and it reminds me that I'm always the one to schedule his hair appointments. The fact that he hasn't even bothered to make his own appointment makes him that much more pathetic to me. Should I give Tori the number for your barber? Her hair looks awful. The mention of Tori's name makes him grimace. Or maybe it's the fact that I'm not jumping back into his arms that's causing that regretful expression on his face. You look good, he says, capping his words off with a smile. I am good, I say, not sure if I'm lying to him or not. He runs a free hand over his jaw and turns away from me, appearing to regret the fact that he's here. How is he here? How does he even know where I live? How did you know where to find me? I ask, tilting my head in curiosity. I see the split-second shift of his eyes as they glance across the courtyard toward Tori's apartment. It's obvious he doesn't want me to notice what's going on in his mind, because it would only shed light on the fact that he's still visiting Tori on a regular basis. Can we talk? He asks, his voice void of the confidence I've always known him to have. If I let you in and convince you it's over, will you promise to stop texting me? He barely nods his head, so I step aside and he walks into the living room. I walk to the dining room table and pull out a chair, making it obvious that he's not making himself comfortable by sitting on the couch. He walks toward the table as his eyes work their way around the room, more than likely in search of information on who lives here with me. He grips the back of the chair and pulls it out slowly while his eyes focus on a pair of Ridge's shoes tucked beside the couch. I like that he noticed them. Are you living here now? He asks, his voice tight and controlled. For now, I say, my own voice even more controlled. I'm proud of myself for keeping calm, because I'm not going to lie and say it doesn't hurt to see him. I gave him 2 years of my life, and all the things I felt for him can't just be cut off at once. Feelings take time to disappear, so they're still here. They're just mixed and swirled together with a hell of a lot of hatred now. It's confusing to feel this way when I see him, because I never thought I could dislike the man in front of me. I never thought he would betray me the way he did. Do you think that's safe? Just moving in with some strange guy you barely know? He's eyeing me disapprovingly as he takes his seat, as if he has the right to judge any part of my life. You and Tori didn't leave me much choice, did you? I found myself screwed over and homeless on my birthday. If anything, I would think you should be congratulating me for handling it all so well. You sure as hell can't sit here and judge me. He huffs, then leans forward over the table and closes his eyes, pressing the palms of his hands against his forehead. Sydney, please, I didn't come here to fight or make excuses. I came here to tell you how sorry I am. If there's one thing I'd like to hear from him, it's an apology. If there are two things I'd like to hear, it's an apology followed by a goodbye. Well, you're here now, I say quietly. Have at it. Tell me how sorry you are. My voice isn't confident anymore. In fact, I want to punch myself because it sounds really sad and heartbroken, and that's the last thing I want him to think I feel. I'm sorry, Sydney, he says, spitting the words out fast and desperately. I'm so, so sorry. I know it won't make it better, but things have always been different between Tori and me. We've known each other for years, and I know it's not an excuse, but our relationship was sexual before you even met us. But that's all it was. It was just sex, and once you were in the picture, neither of us could figure out how to just put a stop to something that had been going on between us for years. I know this doesn't make sense, but what I had with her was completely separate from what I had with you. I love you. If you'll just give me one more chance to prove myself, I'll never speak to Tori again. My heart is pounding as hard as it was the moment I found out they were sleeping together. I'm inhaling controlled breaths in an effort not to climb across the table and beat the shit out of him. I'm also clenching my fists in an effort not to climb across the table and kiss him. I would never take him back, but my head is so damn confused right now because I miss what we had so much. It was simple and good and my heart never ached the way it's been aching these past few weeks. What's confusing me the most is the fact that my heart hasn't been aching like this because I can't be with Hunter. It's aching because I can't be with Ridge. I realize as I'm sitting here that I'm more upset that Ridge came into my life than I am that Hunter left it. How screwed up is that? Before I can respond, Ridge's bedroom door opens, and he walks out. He's in jeans and nothing else, and I tense from the way my body responds to his presence. However, I love the fact that Hunter is about to turn around and witness Ridge looking like this. Ridge pauses just feet from the table when he sees Hunter sitting across from me. He glances from Hunter to me, just as Hunter turns to see who I'm looking at. I can see the concern wash over Ridge's face, along with a flash of anger. He eyes me hard, and I know exactly what's going through his head right now. He's wondering what the hell Hunter is doing here, just as I am. I nod in reassurance, letting Ridge know I'm fine. I shift my eyes to his bedroom and silently tell him that Hunter and I need privacy. Ridge doesn't move. He doesn't like that I just told him to go back to his bedroom. From the looks of it, he doesn't really trust Hunter alone with me. Maybe it's the fact that he wouldn't be able to hear me if I needed him to return for any reason. Whatever it is, I just made him completely uncomfortable with my request. Regardless, he nods and turns back toward his room, but not before eyeing Hunter with a warning shot. Hunter faces me again, but his expression is no longer apologetic. "What the hell was that?" he asks, his voice dripping in jealousy. "That was Ridge," I reply firmly. "I believe the two of you have already met. Are the two of you, like..." Before I answer him, Ridge walks back into the room with his laptop and heads straight to the couch. He drops down onto the sofa, eyeing Hunter the entire time, while he opens his laptop and props his feet up on the coffee table in front of him. The fact that Ridge refuses to leave me alone with Hunter pleases me way too much. "Not that it's any of your business," I say, "but no, we aren't dating. He has a girlfriend." Hunter returns his attention to me and laughs under his breath. I have no idea what he just found funny, but it pisses me off. I fold my arms while I glare at him and lean back against my seat. Hunter leans forward and looks straight into my eyes. "Please tell me you see the irony in this, Sydney." I shake my head, absolutely not seeing any irony in this situation. My lack of comprehension makes him laugh again. "I'm trying to explain to you that what happened between Tori and me was strictly physical. It meant nothing to either of us, but you won't even try to understand my side of it. Yet you're practically eye-fucking your roommate who happens to be in love with another woman, and you don't see the hypocrisy in your actions? You can't tell me you haven't slept with him in the 2 months you've been here. How can you not see that what the two of you are doing isn't any different from what Tori and I did? You can't justify your own actions without forgiving mine." I'm trying to keep my jaw off the floor. I'm trying to keep my anger subdued. I'm trying to keep myself from reaching across this table and punching him square between his accusing eyes, but I've learned the hard way that punching isn't all it's cracked up to be. I allow myself several moments to calm down before I respond. I glance at Ridge, who is still eyeing me. He knows by the look on my face that Hunter just crossed the line. Ridge's hands are gripping the screen of his laptop, prepared to shove it aside if I need him. I don't need him. I've got this. I square up with Hunter, pulling my gaze off Ridge and focusing on the eyes I so desperately want to rip out of Hunter's head. "Ridge has an amazing girlfriend who doesn't deserve to be cheated on, and luckily for her, he's the type of guy who realizes her worth. With that said, you're wrong about the fact that I'm sleeping with him because I'm not. We both know how unfair it would be to his girlfriend, so we don't act on our attraction. You should take note that simply because a girl makes your dick hard That doesn't mean you have to go shove it inside her. I push myself away from the table at the same time as Ridge sets his laptop aside and stands. Go, Hunter. Just go, I say, unable to look at him for another second. The simple fact that he thought he had Ridge pegged as being anything like him pisses me off, and he'd be smart to leave. He stands up and walks straight to the door. He opens it and leaves without even looking back. I'm not sure if his exit was so simple because he finally understands that I'm not willing to take him back, or if it's because Ridge looked as if he was about to kick his ass. I have a good feeling I won't be hearing from Hunter anymore. I'm still staring at the door when my phone sounds off. I take it out of my pocket and turn to Ridge. He's holding his phone, looking at me with concern. Ridge, why was he here? Me, he wanted to talk. Ridge, did you know he was coming over? I look up at Ridge after reading his text, and for the first time, I notice his jaw is tense and he doesn't look very happy. I'd almost label his reaction as slightly jealous, but I don't want to admit that. Me, no. Ridge, why did you let him in? Me, I wanted to hear him apologize. Ridge, did he? Me, yes. Ridge, don't let him in here again. Me, I wasn't planning on it. BTW, you're kind of being a jerk right now. He glances up at me and shrugs. Ridge, it's my apartment, and I don't want him here. Don't let him in again. I don't like his attitude right now. And to be honest, the fact that he just referred to this as his apartment doesn't sit right with me. It feels like a low blow to remind me that I'm at his mercy. I don't bother responding. In fact, I toss the phone onto the couch so he can't text me, and I head toward my room. When I reach my bedroom door, my emotions catch up with me. I'm not sure if it's seeing Hunter again and having all of those hurtful feelings resurface, or if it's the fact that Ridge is being an asshole. Whatever it is, the tears begin to well in my eyes, and I hate that I'm letting either of them get to me in the first place. Ridge grabs my shoulder and turns me around to face him, but I keep my eyes trained on the wall behind him. I don't even want to look him in the eye. He puts my phone back in my hand, wanting me to read whatever he just texted, but I still don't want to. I throw the phone toward the couch again, but he intercepts it, then tries to force it back into my hand. I take it this time, but I press the power button down until the phone shuts off, and then I toss it onto the couch again. I look him in the eye now, and his expression is angry. He takes two steps toward the coffee table, grabs a pen out of the drawer, and walks back to me. He takes my hand, but I pull it from him, still not wanting to know what he has to say to me. I've had enough apologies for tonight. I try to turn away from him, but he grabs my arm and presses it against the door, holding it forcefully while he writes on it. When he's finished writing, I pull my arm away and watch as he tosses his pen onto the couch, then walks back to his bedroom. I look down at my arm. Let him in next time if he's really what you want. My barrier completely breaks. Reading his angry words depletes me of whatever strength I had left to hold back my tears. I rush through my bedroom door and straight into the bathroom. I turn on the faucet and squirt soap into my hands, then begin scrubbing his words off my arm while I cry. I don't even look up when the door to his bedroom opens, but I see him out of my peripheral vision as he closes the door behind him and slowly walks toward me. I'm still scrubbing the ink off my arm and sniffling back the tears when he reaches across me for the soap. He dispenses some onto the palm of his hand, then wraps his fingers around my wrist. The tenderness in his touch lashes out and scars my heart. He runs the soap up my wrist, where the words begin, and lathers my skin as I drop my other hand away and grip the edge of the sink, allowing him to wash his words away. He's apologizing. He massages his thumbs into the words, rubbing them away with the water. I'm still staring down at my arm, but I can feel his gaze directly on me. I'm aware of the exaggerated breaths I have to take in now that he's next to me, so I attempt to slow them down until there are no longer traces of ink on my skin. He grabs a hand towel and dries my arm, then releases me. I bring my arm to my chest and hold it with my other hand, not knowing what move to make now. I finally bring my eyes to meet his, and I instantaneously forget why I'm even upset with him in the first place. His expression is reassuring and apologetic, and maybe even a little longing. He turns and walks out of the bathroom, then returns seconds later with my phone. He powers it on and hands it to me, while he leans against the counter, still looking at me regretfully. Ridge,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean what I said. I thought maybe you were entertaining the thought of accepting his apology, and it upset me. You deserve better than him.
Me. He showed up unannounced. I would never take him back, Ridge. I was just hoping an apology from him would help me move on from the betrayal a little quicker.
Ridge. Did it help at all?
Me. Not really. I feel even more pissed than before he showed up. As Ridge reads my text, I notice the tension ease in his expression. His reaction to my situation with Hunter borders on jealousy, and I hate that this makes me feel good. I hate that every time something Ridge-related makes me feel good, it's immediately followed up with guilt. Why do things between the two of us have to be so complicated? I wish we could keep things simple, but I have no idea how to do that.
Ridge. Let's go write an angry song about him. That might help.
He looks at me with a sly grin, and it makes my insides swirl and melt. Then I freeze just as fast from the guilt of those feelings. For once, it would be nice not to be consumed with shame. I nod and follow him to his room.
Ridge. I'm sitting on the floor again. It's not the most comfortable place to play, but it's much better than being on the bed next to her. I can never seem to focus on the actual music when I'm in her personal space and she's in mine. She requested that I play one of the songs I used to play when I sat out on my balcony to practice, so we've been working through it. She's lying on her stomach, writing on her notepad, erasing and writing, erasing and writing. I'm sitting here on the floor, not even playing. I've played the song enough for her to know the melody by now, so I'm just waiting while I watch her. I love how she focuses so intently on the lyrics as if she's in her own world, and I'm just a lucky observer. Every now and then she'll tuck behind her ear the hair that keeps spilling in front of her face. My favorite thing to watch her do is erase her words. Every time the eraser meets the paper, she pulls her top lip in with her bottom teeth and chews on it. I hate that it's my favorite thing to watch her do, because it shouldn't be. It triggers all these what-ifs in my head, and my mind begins imagining things it shouldn't be imagining. I begin to picture myself lying next to her on the bed while she writes. I imagine her lip being tucked in while I'm just inches from her, looking down on the words she's written. I imagine her glancing up at me, noticing what she's doing to me with her small, innocent gestures. I imagine her rolling onto her back, welcoming me to create secrets with her that'll never leave this room. I close my eyes, wanting to do whatever I can to stop the thoughts. They make me feel just as guilty as if I were to act on them. Sort of similar to how I felt a couple of hours ago when I thought there was a chance she was getting back together with Hunter. I was pissed. I was jealous. I was having thoughts and feelings I knew I shouldn't be having, and it was scaring the shit out of me. I've never had an issue with jealousy until now, and I don't like the person it's turning me into. Especially when the jealousy I'm feeling has nothing to do with the girl I'm in an actual relationship with. I flinch when something hits me on the forehead. I immediately open my eyes and look at Sydney. She's on the bed laughing, pointing at my phone. I pick it up and read her text. Sydney, are you falling asleep? We aren't finished. Me, no, just thinking. She moves over on the bed to make more room and pats the spot next to her. Sydney, come think right here so you can read these. I have most of the lyrics down, but I'm hung up on the chorus. I'm not sure what you want. We haven't openly discussed the fact that we don't write on the bed together anymore. She's focused on the lyrics, though, so I need to pull my shit together and focus on them, too. I set my guitar down and pull myself up, then walk to the bed and lie beside her. I take the notebook out of her hands and pull it in front of me to read what she's written so far. She smells good. Damn. I try to block off my senses somehow, but I know it's a wasted effort. Instead, I focus on the words she's written, quickly impressed at how effortlessly they come to her. Why don't we keep it simple? You talk to your friends, and I'll be here to mingle. But you know that I want to be right by your side, where I ought to be. And you know that I can see the way that your eyes seem to follow me. After reading what she's written, I hand her back the notebook and pick up my phone. I'm confused about the lyrics because they aren't at all what I was expecting. I'm not sure I like them. Me. I thought we were writing an angry song about Hunter. She shrugs, then begins texting me back. Sydney. I tried. The subject of Hunter doesn't really inspire me anymore. You don't have to use them if you don't like them. I can try something different. I stare at her text, not sure how to respond. I don't like the lyrics, but not because they aren't good. It's because the words she's written down make me think she's somehow able to read my mind. Me. I love them. She smiles and says thank you. She flips onto her back, and I catch myself appreciating this moment and this night and her low-cut dress way more than I probably should. When my eyes make their way back to hers, she's watching me, plainly aware of what's going through my head. Eyes don't lie, unfortunately. When neither of us breaks our gaze, I'm forced to swallow the huge lump in my throat. Don't get yourself in trouble, Ridge. Thank God she sits up when she does. Sydney, I'm not sure where you want the chorus to come in. This song is a little more upbeat than the ones I'm used to. I've written 3 different ones, but I don't like how any of them sound. I'm stuck. Me, let me watch you sing it one more time. I roll off the bed and grab the guitar, then take it back to the bed, but sit on the edge this time. We turn to face each other, and I play while she sings. When we make it to the chorus, she stops singing and shrugs, letting me know this is where she's stuck. I take her notebook and read the lyrics over a few times. I glance up at her without being too obvious about it and write the first thing that comes to mind. And I must confess, my interest, the way that you move when you're in that dress, it's making me feel like I want to be the only man that you ever see. I pause from writing and look up at her again, feeling every bit of the words in this chorus. I think we both know the words we write have to do with each other, but that doesn't seem to stop us at all. If we keep having moments like these with words that are way too honest, we'll both end up in trouble. I quickly look back down at the paper as more lyrics begin to enter my head. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble, trouble. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble now. I refuse to look up at her again while I write. I keep my mind focused on the words that somehow seem to flow from my fingertips every time we're together. I don't question what's inspiring me or what they mean. I don't question it, because it's obvious. But it's art. Art is just an expression. An expression isn't the same as an act, as much as it sometimes feels that way. Writing lyrics isn't the same as directly informing someone of your feelings. Is it? I keep my eyes on the paper and continue to write the words I honestly wish I didn't feel. The second I'm finished writing, I'm so worked up I don't allow myself to witness her reaction to the words. I quickly hand her back the notebook and pull my guitar around and begin playing so she can work through the chorus.
Chapter 14. Sydney. He's not looking at me. He doesn't even know I'm not singing the lyrics. I can't sing them. I've listened to him play this song dozens of times from his balcony, yet it never held emotion or meaning until this moment. The fact that he can't even look at me makes the song feel way too personal. It feels as if this song somehow just became his song to me. I turn the notebook over, not wanting to read the words anymore. This song is just one more thing that never should have happened, even though I'm positive it's my new favorite. Me. Do you think Brennan can make a rough cut of this one? I want to hear it. I nudge him with my foot after I send the text, then nod toward his phone when he looks at me. He picks it up to read the text and nods. He doesn't reply or make eye contact with me, though. I glance back down to my phone as the room grows quiet in the absence of the sound of his guitar. I don't like how awkward things just got between us, so I attempt to make small talk to fill the void. I roll onto my back and type out a question that's been on my mind for a while to break up the stillness around us. Me. Why don't you ever practice on your balcony, like you used to? This question gets me immediate eye contact from him, but it doesn't last. His eyes flicker across my face, down my body, and finally back to his phone. Ridge, why would I? You're not out there anymore. And just like that, my defenses are down, and my willpower shot to hell with his honest reply. I nervously pull my bottom lip in and chew on it, then slowly raise my eyes back to his. He's looking at me as if he wishes he were a guy like Hunter, who cared only about himself. He's not the only one wishing that. I want to be Tori right now so much it hurts. I want to be just like her and not give a shit about my self-respect or about Maggie for just a few minutes. Long enough to allow him to do everything his lyrics make clear he wants to do. His eyes fall to my lips and my mouth runs dry. His eyes fall to my chest and it begins to heave deeper than it already was. His eyes fall to my legs and I have to cross them because the way his gaze penetrates my body makes it seem as though he can see right through this dress I'm wearing. His eyes close tightly, and knowing the effect I'm having on him makes me feel as if there might be a lot more truth to his lyrics than he'd like there to be. It's making me feel like I want to be the only man that you ever see. Ridge suddenly stands and drops his phone onto the bed, then walks straight into the bathroom and slams the door. I listen as the shower curtain slides open and the water kicks on. I roll onto my back and release all my pent-up breaths. I'm flustered and confused and angry. I don't like the situation we've put ourselves in, and I know for a fact that even though we haven't acted on it again, nothing about this is innocent. I sit up on the bed, then quickly stand. I need to get out of his room before it completely closes in on me. Just as I'm walking away from the bed, Ridge's phone vibrates on the mattress. I look down at it. Maggie, I'm missing you extra hard today. When you're finished writing with Sydney, can we video chat? I need to see you. Winky face. I stare at her text. I hate her text. I hate that she knows we were just writing together. I hate that he tells her everything. I want these moments to belong to me and Ridge and no one else. It's been 2 hours since he got out of the shower, and I can't bring myself to leave my bedroom. I'm starving, though, and really want to go to the kitchen. I just don't want to see him because I hate how we left things. I don't like that we both know we almost crossed a line tonight. Actually, I don't like that we did cross a line tonight. Although we aren't verbalizing what we're thinking and feeling, writing it in lyrics isn't any less harmful.
There's a knock on my door, and knowing that it's more than likely Ridge causes my heart to betray me by dancing rapidly in my chest. I don't bother getting up to open the door, because he nudges it open right after knocking. He holds up a set of headphones and his cell phone, indicating that he has something he wants me to hear. I nod, and he walks over to the bed and hands them to me. He hits play, but takes a seat on the floor, while I scoot back onto the bed. The song begins to play, and I spend the next 3 minutes barely breathing. Ridge and I never once break our stare throughout the duration of the song. I'm in trouble. Why don't we keep it simple? You talk to your friends, and I'll be here to mingle. But you know that I want to be right by your side, where I ought to be. And you know that I can see the way that your eyes seem to follow me. And I must confess, my interest, the way that you move when you're in that dress, it's making me feel like I want to be the only man that you ever see. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble, trouble. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble, trouble. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble now. I see you some places from time to time. You keep to your business and I keep to mine. But you know that I want to be right by your side where I ought to be. And you know that I can see the way that your eyes seem to follow me. And I must confess, my interest, the way that you move when you're in that dress, it's making me feel like I want to be the only man that you ever see. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble, trouble. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble, trouble. Whoa, oh, 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 I'm in trouble now.
Ridge. Maggie. Guess who gets to see me tomorrow? Me. Kurt Vonnegut? Maggie. Guess again. Me. Anderson Cooper? Maggie. No, but close. Me. Amanda Bynes? Maggie. You're so random. You get to see me tomorrow, and you get to spend a whole 2 days with me, and I know I'm trying to save money, but I bought you 2 new bras. Me. How did I ever get so lucky to find the one and only girl who supports and encourages my transvestite tendencies? Maggie. I ask myself that same question every day. Me. What time do I get to see you? Maggie. Well, it all depends on the dreaded T word again. Me. Ah, yes. Well, we shall discuss it no further. Try to be here by 6, at least. Warren's birthday party is tomorrow night, and I want to spend time with you before all his crazy friends get here. Maggie. Thank you for reminding me. What should I get him? Me. Nothing. Sydney and I are pulling the ultimate prank. We told everyone to donate to charity in lieu of gifts. He'll be pissed when people start handing him all the donation cards in his honor. Maggie. You two are evil. Should I bring something? A cake, maybe? Me. Nope, we got it. We felt bad for the no gifts pranks, so we're about to bake him 5 different flavored cakes to make up for it. Maggie. Make sure one of them is German chocolate. Me. Already got you covered, babe. I love you. Maggie. Love you too. I close out our texts and open the unread one I have from Sydney. Sydney. You forgot vanilla extract, dumbass. It was on the list, item 5. Now you have to go back to the store. Me. Maybe next time you should write more legibly and return my text when I'm at the grocery store, attempting to decipher item 5. I'll be back in 20. Preheat the oven and text me if you think of anything else. I laugh, put my phone into my pocket, grab my keys, and head to the store. Again. We're on cake number 3. I'm beginning to believe that those who are musically gifted seriously lack talent in the kitchen skills department. Sydney and I work really well together when it comes to writing music, but our lack of finesse and knowledge when it comes to mixing a few ingredients together is a little pathetic. She insisted that we bake the cakes from scratch, whereas I would have grabbed the box mixes. But it's kind of fun, so I'm not complaining. She places the third cake in the oven and sets the timer. She turns around and mouths, 30 minutes, then pushes herself up onto the counter. Sydney, is your little brother coming tomorrow? Me. They're going to try. They opened for a band in San Antonio at 7 tomorrow night, so as long as they get loaded up on time, they should be here by 10. Sydney, the whole band? I get to meet the whole band? Me. Yep, and I bet they'll even sign your boobs. Sydney.
Squee!
Me. If those letters really make up a sound, I am so, so glad I can't hear it. She laughs. Sydney. How did y'all come up with the band name Sounds of Cedar? Anytime anyone's asked how I came up with the name of the band, I just say I thought it sounded cool. But I can't lie to Sydney. There's something about her that pulls stories about my childhood out of me that I've never told anyone. Not even Maggie. Maggie has asked in the past why I never speak out loud and where I came up with the name of the band, but I don't like to bring up anything negative that might cause her even the smallest amount of concern. She's got enough to deal with in her own life. She doesn't need to add my childhood issues to that. They're in the past, and there's no need to bring them up. However, Sydney's a different story. She seems so curious about me, about life, about people in general. It's easy to tell her things. Sydney, uh-oh, looks like I need to prepare myself for a good story because you look like you don't want to answer that. I turn around until my back is pressed against the countertop she's sitting on, and I lean against it. Me, you just love the heart-wrenching stuff, huh? Sydney, yep, give it to me. Maggie, Maggie, Maggie. I often find myself repeating Maggie's name when I'm with Sydney, especially when Sydney says things like, give it to me. The last couple of weeks have been okay since our talk. We've definitely had our moments, but one of us is usually quick to begin pointing out flaws and repulsive personality traits to get us back on track. Aside from a couple of weeks ago, when our writing session ended with me having to take a cold shower, 2 nights ago was probably the hardest time of all for me. I don't know what it is about the way she sings. I can simply be watching her, and I get the same feeling I get when I press my ear to her chest or rest my hand against her throat. She closes her eyes and starts singing the words, and the passion and feelings that pour from her are so powerful I sometimes forget I can't even hear her. This particular night, we were writing a song from scratch, and we couldn't communicate well enough to understand it. I needed to hear her. And although we were both reluctant, it ended with my head pressed to her chest and my hand resting against her throat. While she was singing, she casually brought her hand to my hair and was twirling her fingers around. I could have stayed in that position with her all night. I would have if every touch of her hand didn't make me crave a little bit more. I finally had to tear myself away from her, but just being on the floor wasn't enough separation. I wanted her so bad. It was all I could think about. I ended up asking her to tell me one of her flaws, and instead of giving me one, she stood up and left my bedroom. The way she had been touching my hair was a very natural thing for her to do, considering the way we were positioned. It's what a guy would do to his girlfriend if he were holding her against his chest, and it's what a girl would do to her boyfriend if he were wrapped around her. But we aren't those things. The relationship we have is different from anything I've experienced. Mostly because we do have a lot of physical closeness based on the nature of writing music together, and the fact that I have to use my sense of touch to replace my sense of hearing in some situations. So while we're in those situations, the lines become muddy, and reactions become unintentional. As much as I wish I could admit we've moved past our attraction for each other, I can't deny that I feel mine growing with each day that passes. Being around her isn't necessarily hard all the time, though. Just most of the time. Whatever is going on between us, I know Maggie wouldn't approve, and I try to do right by my relationship with her. However, since I can't really define where the line is drawn between inappropriate and appropriate, It makes it hard to stay on the right side sometimes. Like right now. I'm staring down at my phone, about to text her, and she's leaning behind me, both of her hands kneading the tension out of my shoulders. With as much writing as we've been doing and the fact that I sit on the floor now instead of the bed, I've had a few issues with my back. It's become natural for her to rub it when she knows it's hurting. Would I let her do this when Maggie is in the room? Hell no. Do I stop her? No. Should I? Absolutely. I know without a doubt that I don't want to cheat on Maggie. I've never been that type of guy, and I don't ever want to be that type of guy. The problem is, I'm not thinking about Maggie when I'm with Sydney. The times I spend with Sydney are spent with Sydney, and nothing else crosses my mind. But the times I spend with Maggie are spent with Maggie. I don't think about Sydney. It's as though times with Maggie and times with Sydney occur on two different planets. Planets that don't intersect, and in time zones that don't overlap. Until tomorrow, anyway. We've all spent time together in the past, but not since I've been honest with myself about how I feel for Sydney. And although I would never want Maggie to know I've developed feelings for someone else, I'm worried she'll be able to tell. I tell myself that with enough effort, I can learn to control my feelings. But then Sydney will do or say something or give me a look, and I can literally feel the part of my heart that belongs to her getting fuller, as much as I want it to empty. I'm worried that feelings are the one thing in our lives that we have absolutely no control over.
Chapter 15. Sydney. Me. What's taking you so long? Are you writing a damn book? I don't know if my rubbing his shoulders is putting him to sleep, but he's been staring at his phone for 5 solid minutes. Ridge. Sorry, lost in thought. Me. I can see that. So, sounds of cedar? Ridge. It's kind of a long story. Let me grab my laptop. I open up our Facebook messages on my phone. When he returns, he leans against a counter several feet away from me. I'm aware of the fact that he's put space between us, and it makes me feel somewhat uncomfortable, because I know I shouldn't have been rubbing his shoulders. It's too much, considering what's happened between us in the past, but I feel as if it's my fault his shoulders hurt in the first place. He doesn't really complain about what playing on the floor is doing to him, but I can tell it hurts sometimes. Especially after nights like last night, when we wrote for 3 hours straight. I asked him to start playing on the floor to help with the fact that things seem to be more difficult when he's on the bed. If I didn't still have such a huge crush on his guitar playing, it might not be as big a problem. But I do still have a definite crush on his guitar playing. And I would say I have a definite crush on him, but crush doesn't even begin to define it. I'm not even gonna try to define how I feel about him, because I refuse to let my thoughts go there. Not now, and not ever. Ridge. We had all been playing together for fun for about 6 months before we got our first real gig at a local restaurant. They needed us to give them the name of our band so they could put us on the schedule. We had never really considered ourselves an actual band before that, since it was all in fun, but that night, we agreed that maybe for local things like the restaurant, it would be good to have a name. We all took turns throwing out suggestions, but we couldn't seem to agree on anything. At one point, Brennan suggested we call ourselves Freak Frogs. I laughed. I told him it sounded like a punk band, that we needed a title with more of an acoustic sound. He got upset and said I shouldn't really be allowed to comment on how music or titles sound since, well, yay for lame deaf jokes from 16-year-old little brothers. Anyway, Warren didn't like how cocky Brennan was back then, so he said I should choose the name and everyone had to agree on it. Brennan got pissed and walked off, said he didn't want to be in the band anyway. I knew he was just having a Brennan tantrum. He didn't have them often, but when he did have them, I understood. I mean, the kid had virtually no parents and he was raising himself, so I thought he was pretty damn mature despite the sporadic tantrums. I told the guys I wanted to think on it for a while,
I tried to come up with names that I thought would mean something to everyone, but mostly to Brennan. I thought back on what got me into listening to music in the first place. Brennan was around 2 years old, and I was 5. I've already shared to you all the qualities my parents possessed, so I won't go back into that. But in addition to all their addictions, they also liked to party. They would send us to our rooms at night once all their friends began to arrive. I noticed that Brennan was always wearing the same diapers when he woke up that he wore to bed. They never checked on him, never fed him at night or changed him or even checked to see if he was still breathing. This is probably something that had been occurring since he was an infant, but I didn't really notice until I started school, because I think I was just too young. We weren't allowed to leave our rooms at night. I don't remember why I was too scared to leave my room, but I'm sure I'd been punished for it before, or it wouldn't have bothered me. I would wait until the parties were over and my parents went to bed before I could leave my room and go check on Brennan. The problem with this was that I couldn't hear, so I never knew when the music would stop, and I never knew if they had gone to their bedroom because I wasn't allowed to open my door. Instead of risking being caught, I would just press my ear to the floor and feel the vibrations of the music. Every night, I would lie there for no telling how long, just waiting for the music to stop. I began to recognize the songs based on how they felt through the floor, and I learned how to predict which songs were coming next since they played the same albums night after night. I even began to learn how to tap along with the rhythm. After the music would finally stop, I would keep my ear pressed to the floor and wait for my parents' footsteps to indicate that they had gone to their bedroom. Once I knew the coast was clear, I would go to Brennan's room and bring him back to bed with me. That way, when he woke up crying, I could help him. Which brings me back to the point of this story, how I came up with the band name. I learned how to differentiate chords and sounds through all the nights my body and my ears were pressed against the cedar floor. Hence, sounds of cedar.
Inhale, exhale. Beat, beat. Pause. Contract. Expand. I don't even realize how on edge I am until I see the white in my knuckles as I grip my phone. We both remain still for several moments while I attempt to get the image of the 5-year-old Ridge out of my head. It's gut-wrenching. Me. I guess that explains how you can differentiate vibrations so well. And I guess Brennan agreed once you told him the name, because how could he not appreciate that? Ridge.
Brennan doesn't know that story. Once again, you're the first person I've ever shared it with.
I lift my eyes back to his and inhale, but for the life of me, I can't remember how to exhale. He's a good 3 feet away. But I feel as if every single part of me that his eyes fall on is being directly touched by him. For the first time in a while, the fear etches its way back into my heart. Fear that one of these moments will be one neither of us can resist. He sets his laptop on the counter and folds his arms across his chest. Before his eyes meet mine, his gaze falls on my legs. And then he slowly works his eyes up the entire length of my body. His eyes are narrow and focused. The way he's looking at me makes me want to lunge for the freezer and crawl inside. His eyes are fixed on my mouth, and he quietly swallows, then reaches beside him and picks up his phone. "Ridge."
"Hurry, Sid. I need a serious flaw, and I need it now."
I force a smile, although my insides are screaming for me not to text him back a flaw. It's as if my fingers are fighting with themselves as they fly over the screen in front of me. Me. Sometimes when I'm frustrated with you, I wait until you look away and then I yell mean things at you. He laughs and looks back up at me. "Thank you," he silently mouths. It's the first time he's ever mouthed words. And if he weren't walking away from me right now, I'd be begging him to do it again.
Part 1. Sydney. 0. It's after midnight, but we finally finish adding icing to the fifth and final cake. He cleans the last of the ingredients off the